Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Match of the Week podcast here on the Place to Be Nation podcast network. I'm Tim, and with me is Tanner. Tanner, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Just, contemplating life. Why am I blocked by Zencastr on Twitter? You know, the usual.
I don't know. I just a premium streaming service blocking one of its most fervent users. What the hell, man? What did you do? What did you do?
It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me. But, you know, I digress.
Yeah, well, you know what also doesn't make sense to me? Segue. Ric Flair in ECW. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. We're going to talk about a match that happened on the WWE ECW brand. So this is, of course, the comeback for ECW back in 2006. This is in July 11th of 2006 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and it is Ric Flair taking on the Big Show in an Extreme Rules match
for the ECW championship,
because that's how he wants to win his next championship.
Yep.
Tanner, what the hell?
If I'm not mistaken, one of only two matches Ric Flair had in WWE ECW. Am I correct? Did he only
have
one more
after this? I can't even remember the other match he had.
The other match is a tag match. It's MVP and Elijah Burke, I believe, versus CM Punk and Ric Flair.
Wait.
2008, during Flair's, like, if you lose the match, you have to retire. Yeah. It happened, like, probably.
There it is. February of 2008. Yeah. What in the hell?
It happened a month before Mania 24 against Shawn Michaels.
Wow.
Don't ask me how I remember any of this.
Okay. You're blowing my mind here. Okay. So now that we've gotten that out of the way. So Flair in 2006 was embroiled with this. It was a feud with Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of weeks previously, he had had a match with him. I can't remember the pay-per-view. It might have been Vengeance. And basically, it turned into this brawl and bloodied and got extreme and all that stuff. And so this started over a passage from one of Foley's books, and they turned into an angle. And so Flair, to try and get into Foley's head, decides to try and prove that he can be basically a deathmatch worker.
Yeah. Ric Flair is hardcore.
So after he won the ECW championship in not the best fashion, the first title defense for Big Show is against Ric Flair. And it's basically a decade after Flair dropped the WCW World Heavyweight Championship to the Giant on Nitro. And here we are 10 years later, and they're having an Extreme Rules match. Tanner, what the hell?
Just like everybody predicted it would be.
Yeah, correct.
Everybody
knew thinking about 51-year-old Ric Flair and what he was going to be doing. He was like, I'm going to become a Terry Funk with more blood. That's what I'm going to do.
That's what it is. And like, that was the mid to late 2000s MO for Ric Flair was that he would just bleed profusely in every match. Like, he had the Orton steel cage match, the Triple H steel cage match, the Triple H last man standing match, which are all great matches in their own right. But this is just such a fun garbage TV brawl. Like, I just really wanted to talk about it. Like, even Tim was like, what the hell? Why? Okay, we can talk
about
it.
Because I'd seen it.
Yeah.
Like, I'd seen this match before. It's a semi-famous match because when it happened at the time. So, 2006 at this time was very much, it was before Twitter, but it was very much a, like, Scott Keith 411 kind of Wrestling Observer, like TV report-esque message board heavy talking point type of time on the internet. And so there are a lot of folks who are just like, Flair just needs to give it up. I don't know what the hell he's doing. And then he goes and has a match like this, and we're just like, what? So is Flair going to go wrestle Onita next? Like, what the hell, man?
Oh, man. I would have paid.
God, could you imagine that? Could you imagine Onita freaking working Vince and be like, hey, let me come in and work Flair? He would have. But God, now I want to hear about that conversation. But so this match, so obviously, okay, so Show is booked to be unstoppable at this point. He is Paul Heyman's handpicked guy to be the ECW champion. He screwed over Rob Van Dam to get him the belt. And so basically Flair, because he's Ric Flair, he's going to try and do what he always does and go after a guy because he's Ric fucking Flair. But you're facing the Big Show, who's 300 pounds heavier than you.
Yeah, because this is when Big Show is at his biggest. So he's like a legit 500 pounds in this match.
Yeah, 520 or something like that, which is just nuts.
Yeah.
And so, of course, Flair just tries to go right after him, and then Show's like, yeah, that's funny. And the first 5 minutes of this match are basically Show just destroying Flair. And making Flair take the big signature Flair bumps that he would be taking at this point of his career, you know. Halfway through, once the plunder starts to get introduced and real danger starts to set in, Flair decides to kick Show in the nuts. And then things get even crazier. I can't even really like. Okay, we're going to describe the final 5 minutes of this match to you because that is our job on this podcast, is to let you, the listener, know what happened in this match. But I can't even begin to tell you how surreal it is to see this match happen. I really can't.
Like, even watching it, because I rewatched it today, actually. Rewatching it, it's just like, what a weird, crazy thing to have happened. To have, like, even get booked in the first place. Like, whoever, I don't know who was running TV for ECW in 2006. I guess Heyman. But it's just weird to think, it was like, you know what? We're putting Flair against the Big Show. Like, it's not even like a weird, zany dream match. It's not like Flair versus Sandman or Flair versus Sabu. No, it's Flair versus Big Show. And I don't know. Like, the fact, like, 2006 WWE in a nutshell, because it's just so utterly bizarre. Like, what, one of my favorite matches from WWE television 2006, and WWE television 2006, especially SmackDown, was very, very strong. So
yeah, and that's what's kind of odd about this is that, you know, Flair, like, ECW supposedly it was only an hour a week,
yep,
but it had like this cavalcade of a roster of folks to use. Like, they weren't really like either short of people to work on the show. They even got jobber matches on there, and they had some old ECW guys that Vince didn't want to sign full time come in and get at least TV spots and whatnot.
Yeah.
And
they also taped at the same time as SmackDown, so they could have utilized SmackDown's roster. Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of a 205 Live scenario here. But, like, it's just amazing. First off, it's amazing that this storyline exists, that Flair decides to just become a deathmatch worker for 4 months. But, like, I just – the final 5 minutes of this match are what people talk about. It's the thing that I think kind of, you know, lords over this match in a way that is both I would say infamous, but also just kind of like it speaks to what Ric Flair would do at the time in his life where he felt like he needed to still be the guy, like to show that he could still, you know, be a part of modern wrestling. And I still don't know how I really feel about this match. I just know that it is essentially like watching an episode of Twin Peaks in wrestling form. That's really all I know about it. That's really the only way I can really describe it.
I haven't watched Twin Peaks, but I have seen Mulholland Drive. So I've also
that right there, very apt description. Yeah.
It's so essentially in the final 5 minutes, we see Flair finally like leaning into like, oh shit, there's no rules, I can do whatever I want. So like, he, you know, he Flair brings in a chair and like thumbtacks and a barbed wire baseball bat, kind of like Foley's signature items, especially the tacks and the ball bat. And like, he tries to set it up, like go, you know, head to head with Big Show, but also Big Show being, you know, 6'11", 7 foot tall, 500 plus pounds, you know, this old man swinging the stuff at him, it's not really affecting him too much. So, and Big Show's whole gimmick at the time was like, I am this extreme, very violent, giant, and I can, you know, make fools of all of your ECW wrestlers. I mean, he does the same thing later on. He has another match kind of similar to this one against Sabu, which is weird to say that a Ric Flair and a Sabu match against the Big Show were structured the same, but it's true. And so it's pretty much just Flair like trying his bag of tricks, but also trying Foley's bag of tricks and it not working. And, you know, obviously him losing in the end. But like Flair takes some like gnarly bumps, like Flair bumps into the thumbtacks. Like, yeah, it's insane. Like, I wouldn't bump into the thumbtacks now, like much less when I was however old Flair is here in his 50s.
Yeah, he's 51, I want to say, at this time. 52, something like that, along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just, oh, God.
He was insane. 57. It really is.
57. Holy. Are you serious? Yeah. 57? Yeah. My God.
He's 69 now.
Right. Oh, God. Well, so there's a couple of things. So, of course, the low blows are what get him back into it. But, like, he's trying to use everything he can out of that trash bin. He tried to get it earlier. Show stopped him. And then once he goes on offense, it's this great. It's the traditional. How are you going to knock down a giant in this type of atmosphere? And there's some really great kind of lead ups to it. Chair shots. A couple more low blows. He brings out the barbed wire baseball bat as kind of like a direct shot, yeah, at Foley, because of course that's Foley's baby. He empties out the thumbtacks, like you said, but of course, because the thumbtacks of the person who wants to use them never actually get used the way you want them to, he gets choke slammed into them, and then he gives him that just show at this time. He does this cobra clutch like backbreaker. Oh, yeah. And it never, never looked not, yeah, legit. Like, it looked like he was literally trying to absolutely destroy the guy he was putting it on. It was nasty. And Flair not only gives up because of it, but once he's given up, Show then flings him back into, yep, the tacks. Just insane.
I mean, it's gross how much Flair went through in this match. Like, and he is a bloody mess, which obviously old man Flair is going to bleed all over the place anyways, but it's like bizarre that like it's so weird to see this match in 2006 and then like fast forward to WWE in July of 2008 and like this match would have never have happened, like especially during the hardcore PG era, which I feel like even now still has some effects on the product we see. It's right. Like this match had to happen at this time in this place. Like, I don't know. It's one of those matches I look back on and I'm like, thank God we got that. Thank God we have a 57-year-old Ric Flair and an Extreme Rules match against the Big Show in 2006. Like, thank you. Like, I don't know what we did to deserve it, but thank you so much for it.
We didn't even mention Flair's promo before this match. He cuts a great freaking promo before this match, too. It basically just lays it out. He's like, he's telling Foley, hey, man, if that's the game you want to play, I'm going to go after my record-breaking championship and do it at the expense of the guy who just won it. He's never held the ECW title before. Why not, even in the style of match that he's not used to? He thinks because he's the greatest of all time, he can still go and do it. But, like, I think, yeah, the atmosphere for this match is perhaps the thing that still has the most going for it at this point in time, because it is in this really weird time, you know, pre-Benoit, right? Benoit is the next year when all that goes down, that WWE had been public but didn't really know how to really go about it in the way without alienating the fan base that had got them there. So they're kind of in this weird, like, what do we do here? We have, you know, these fans who are still rabid for this style of wrestling, but we have these, you know, guys we're trying to bring along, like Orton and Edge, and while they can be edgy, we need them to kind of lead us in the future. And instead, you're kind of in this really weird middle ground until, you know, they decide to really start changing their image after what happened to with Benoit's family. Is like, wow, hey, like, what is 2006 WWE ECW? It is weird matches like this, and the zombie showing up, and riot gear, and the ECW set just being set up on the side entrance of an arena, like just really weird timing, really weird atmosphere. But also, you know, Eric Ritz for Segunda Caída wrote up a lot of WWE ECW, and a lot of it stands up. Like, a lot of it really stands up.
I tweeted the other day, and I 100% believe this, that as a in-ring product, WWE ECW is miles ahead of original ECW.
If I can say it, it's very much like a proto NXT in a lot of ways. It's an hour program. You're trying to not use the same guys every week. You're trying to get a little bit of variety out of everybody because of that hour.
Definitely, and so in its later days, really do, for sure. Like, with all the younger guys, they bought
sure.
In. Absolutely.
Right. And so it becomes a show where you really get to tell long stories week to week. And you don't really have to worry about trying to get everybody in on a 2-hour block or a 3-hour block. And it really paid off in the long run, at least until, you know, FCW became the go-to because it was cheaper than producing an actual weekly television program like ECW every week. And then you got to go to NXT, and, well, they're losing money, so I don't know what they're doing there. But, like, this was a very odd but very cool time to see just a lot of things that, especially in 2006, like right after peak smart fan internet usage, that you just couldn't believe you were watching.
Yeah,
you
like really I urge everybody to go watch this match. Just cause it's not very long, like 12, 15 minutes maybe.
Right.
It's on the network. You can probably find it on YouTube or Daily Motion too. But it's one of those matches that just needs to be seen to be believed. Because it's like, I don't know. It really makes you appreciate late era Flair, you know, be willing to take these bumps. And like, Ric Flair still had like some good matches like after this. Like, I mean, obviously, I think the Michaels match at Mania 24 is a classic. But even in like TNA in like 2010, he was having like, he had that great Last Man Standing match with Mick Foley. Where they kind of carried over their WWE feud, and like it's another feud over a quote, and I think in Foley's other book, and like there's this great spot where Flair hits Foley with the book, which has nothing to do with this, but again, just shows you like how great Flair was up until like his very last match.
Yeah, and this was one of those things where you don't think about it, and everybody who thinks about Flair really does think about his peak in the 80s and some stuff into the 90s, and they really just kind of crap all over his 2000 stuff. But just because he wasn't putting on the Ric Flair, you know, touring NWA champ matches of old doesn't mean that he still wasn't able to work a compelling wrestling match. You're talking about perhaps the single most talented professional wrestler of all time going out there and at 57 – being like, yeah, I'll take a bump into thumbtacks, whatever. Let's go. I'll hard way cut my forehead because I've bladed so much. Yeah, why not? Let's go.
It's insanity. It really makes you appreciate like having like the old grandpa wrestler. It's pretty much Ric Flair in his later WWE days, especially, was like if Terry Funk got like a big late 2000s WWE push, which would have been incredible. But like, that's what Flair was, because he pivots from like technical guy to like full on bloody brawls. Like, again, the Orton match, the Triple H matches, this match, the Foley matches. I mean, hell, Flair was in a Money in the Bank. Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's absurd how much this man did in like his last 4 years in WWE as a full-time active wrestler.
Right. And, you know, one of the things I think that was interesting about the early years. So obviously, you know, the one night stand that led to RVD, you know, winning the belt. And then of course him and Sabu get pulled over and they end up getting fired from the company. It kind of throws a giant wrench into what they wanted this to be, as far as a brand goes. And so they had to depend more on it being, like you said, more of just a bring young guys up and not really, you know, depend on the Sandman or Sabu or any of the other guys. You know, Dreamer was always going to be there because Dreamer's Dreamer. But I feel like the interesting thing about this is that they're using WWE guys to prop up the brand. And I think it was interesting to say this is basically almost 6 months in the run at this point, or a few weeks in the run or what have you. It's like, man, it's one of those things where you kind of wonder how this even exists. Like if it was just going to be another offshoot WWE brand, you know? I'm still kind of shocked at it.
It's absurd that the rebooted ECW lasted as long as it did, because it didn't go out. Did it in? It ended in 2010, 2011, 2010. Yeah, it was 2010.
Yeah.
So like, it went on for 4 years, and like, it was only and you know, eventually they end up just dropping all the ECW guys, most of the ECW guys, and it comes like the Miz and Morrison show. And then like Christian comes along,
Evan Bourne, Elijah Burke, Punk.
The only Jack ECW Swagger, guy that's consistent there is Tommy Dreamer. Like, I think he's there the entire run, or nearly the entire run. And they do a great storyline with him during ECW's dying days, in their last year, where Dreamer, you know, finally wins the title, and it's like this big cool moment. But it's weird to think about how this match happens, and like pretty much after the Big Show run is when they're just like, well, okay, but we're just going to make this like our third brand. And like, it, like they still try to do like the Extreme Rules matches and stuff, but it's definitely like a prototype, like you said, a prototype NXT, a prototype of what NXT is today. Not like the original show where, you know, they played games and stuff. But I don't know. Right. It's one of those. It's just kind of cool to see the evolution of ECW. I highly like ECW reboot had some phenomenal television matches, had some great showings on pay-per-view that I think everybody needs to go out and see, just because I think it's a very underrated brand as a whole. I feel like it's also kind of like what 205 Live is now. Like, the people that watch 205 Live now really love 205 Live. It's just a lot of people aren't watching it still, despite probably putting on the best matches in the company on a week-to-week basis.
Buddy Murphy is the best wrestler on planet Earth right now, folks.
So, I don't know. So, I mean, go watch Reboot ECW, and you'll find some stuff. And definitely watch the old One Night Stand shows, because they're all really good.
Right, man. But yeah, this is, I just, man, there's the other thing too, is like, we try and like do other matches kind of similar to this. I mean, the other Flair matches with Foley that bookend this, the Vengeance 2 out of 3 falls match, and then the SummerSlam match that was one of the most divisive matches of the year at that time. Like, people were either really, really loved it or just like, what the hell am I watching? That's probably the only other thing we can really compare these to. And so you know, go watch those if you're interested in watching Ric Flair do ridiculous things. The Taboo Tuesday cage match, the Last Man Standing match with Triple H, like Tanner talked about. Those are probably just this really strange, weird, but also in retrospect, kind of awesome Ric Flair run to at least show that he wants to hang with guys and have blood feuds.
That steel cage match is phenomenal. With Triple H, it's like, it's like an all-timer steel cage match in my book.
Yeah, it's probably one of the best WWE cage matches of all time.
Oh yeah, no doubt, the best WWE cage match of all time.
We might have to do that down the line, just because it's been a long time since I've watched that, and I'd really like to revisit that now. But yeah, so this stretch of Flair is, I think now with retrospect, I think it's a lot better than what a lot of folks thought of it at the time. But I will say that what folks thought of it at the time was really very much a product of the environment, where the whole idea of, like, a lot of people, the Ric Flair DVD set had come out. There's a lot of people who, because of the internet and because of peer-to-peer streaming services and all that, were able to see other Flair matches that maybe they hadn't seen before. And it's like, that's the Flair I love. That's the Flair I remember. And so kind of the prevailing thought at the time was like, well, why the hell is Flair doing this? And it's, you know, tarnishing his legacy is some bullshit that people were bringing up at the time. But really, it is one of those things where, for me, like, I think the longer you look back at it, you're just like, you kind of have to tip your hat to him, because it's like, there ain't no 57-year-old who should be doing what he did and doing it the way he did either. Yeah, and
doing it well, I think we should add, like, actively good.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, like, those five matches we mentioned, they're all at least good, and at least a couple of them are very good, if not great. And so, if you don't believe that, then you know you're definitely entitled to your opinion. But it's like, man, I'd really like to kind of figure out what you think of those not being at least compelling matches. Then, so yes, I'd say those. I mean, is there anything else? I think those are the matches, right? Those, the Triple H matches and the other Foley matches. I really think that those are the only things you can really point to when it comes to Flair at this time.
Yeah, for sure. Like, again, there's the Foley match a couple of years in 2010 in TNA after this. That's similar to this, but that's a couple of years later. That's an entirely different Flair almost. It's like post-retirement Flair.
Got it.
That's where people could maybe make the argument of tarnishing your legacy of not staying retired.
Now we can talk about that. Now, that's the time. Where we will listen to your thoughts on that for sure. So, so this is available obviously on the award-winning World Wrestling Federation Network, in the WWE ECW section. It's also one of those, like, one of the first matches that hit YouTube. Like, when YouTube started coming up around this time, like, everybody was posting this to YouTube. So it's all out there. You can find this match pretty easily. Well worth your time to watch it. And cringe and also be like, wow, at majority of this match just because it exists. Just insane that this match exists. So, Tanner, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Follow me on Twitter at Tanner1495. You can also, I co-host another podcast with my friends called the All You Can Hear podcast. You can follow us at AYCH podcast. We're available on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play Music.
Follow me at Mr. Tim Livingston on the Twitter. Also PPW Petaluma at PPW Petaluma on the Twitter. Powerbomb.tv. Check out the Scenic City Invitational from last month if you haven't already. I did commentary on the future show with Dylan Hells, and it was a great show. Hour goes right by. You get to see Marco Stunt, who you most recently just saw it All In, I'm pretty sure. And I think that it's well worth your time if you have the old powerbomb.tv subscription. You also can get a 20-day free trial if you use the code SCI20Days. So do that if you want to as well. So that is my official plug for powerbomb.tv.
Dylan would be proud of that SCI plug.
I hope so. I hope so. So, all right. Well, Tanner, great to do this with you as always. We're not sure what we're going to do for next time. We're trying to branch out. We went through a long Japan phase. Now we kind of think have to kind of figure out some other stuff. because we've done a lot of Japanese matches. Now we do this match. So we're going to try and keep it fresh for you on the weekly basis, but we hope you're enjoying them, and we'll see you next time here on the Match of the Week pod.
Ciao. Well, it's a big show.